Everything you're hearing is from the Home Depot. From the baseboards and nails to these throw pillows. Even those super soft sheets. Because now at the Home Depot, you can get everything for your bedroom. From wooden nightstands to modern benches. Save up to 25% on select bedroom furniture. Plus free and flexible delivery and easy in-store returns. Shop decor now at HomeDepot.com. More saving, more kinds of doing. Valid on select items online only. Free delivery on select items, $45 or more. Visit HomeDepot.com for more information.
Welcome to Creating a Family, a talk about adoption and foster care. Today we're going to be talking about transitioning home as a newly adopted family, things to prepare for. This is a great topic, great show, great guests. Here's a sample of what you're going to hear.
That can also spill over after placement too, especially if the adoptive parent struggles at all. And I don't know how many folks have said they were told, well, isn't this what you wanted? If the individual sees that they're struggling, they are mystified that after having the child placed and welcomed into the family, that the adoptive parent would struggle. And so I think it even is like a double whammy.
Guys, I have a favor to ask. We're coming up to the end of the year, and probably your inboxes are as full as mine of requests for donations. But the reality is Creating a Family is a nonprofit, and we exist because people donate. Every week we bring you this show, and we bring you two blogs a week. We usually add one or two other resources to our site every week. And all of that takes time and, quite frankly, money. And we could use yours. Simple and too direct and to the point. I wanted to read to you a comment that we received from a she's a social worker. And I so appreciate her thoughts on what it is that we do. She goes, as a social worker, I believe creating a family is the best resource available for anyone touched by adoption. You have never shied away from covering difficult topics on sensitive issues. I appreciate the perspective of intelligent inquiry and supportive understanding that has characterized creating a family. Thank you, Lee Varon. Thank you, Lee, for those words. We are making a difference, guys. We're making a difference in the lives of families, and we really, really could use your support. So please go to our website, creatingafamily.org, and on the upper right-hand side there is a corner, I guess, there is a button that says donate. Any amount is helpful. Honestly, $3 a month, and you can sign up for recurring payment. That really does help us continue to do what we do. So thank you, and I really would appreciate that. This show is brought to you by our corporate sponsors, this is actually a foundation support, foundation partner, that is the Jockey Being Family Foundation. Their mission is similar to ours. They are trying to strengthen adoptive families through post-adoption services. And they do that, one of the ways they do that is through their support of this show and underwriting their show, and we really do appreciate their support. In addition to the great folks at Jockey Being Family, we also partner with organizations and agencies that believe in what we do. One such agency is Children's House International. They are a nonprofit, Hague-accredited international adoption agency with programs in 13 countries. And they provide full services, including home studies, in the states of Florida, Louisiana, Massachusetts, Texas, Utah, and Washington State. And they place children with any U.S.-approved family worldwide. Today, we're going to be talking about transitioning home as a newly adopted family, things to prepare for. Our guest for this interview is Dr. Karen Foley. She is the director of the PhD in nursing program at Purdue University School of Nursing. She is a leading researcher in the post-adoption transition and is the co-author of Post-Adoption Blues. She has a new book. It is Nursing Care of Adopted and Foster... No, wait, let me get that again. Nursing Care of Adoption and Kinship Families. And it received the American Psychiatric Nurse Association 2018 Award for Media. So let us welcome right now Dr. Karen Foley. Karen, welcome to Creating a Family, and we're so appreciative of this interview, and congratulations on the American Psychiatric Nursing Association Award.
Well, thank you so much, Dawn. I really appreciate being here today and for your congratulations.
Yeah, I am so looking forward to this interview. For people who have listened to our courses, other courses, well, they know that I am a research geek. But this is an area that a lot of people are not researching in, and so I so appreciate the research you've done, as well as your books. I haven't read your new book, but I have certainly read your Post-Adoption Blues, and I've read some of your current research. And I want to start by asking you to describe the title alone of this I love. It's Transitions of Adoptive Parents, a Longitudinal Mixed Method Analysis. But I love the part about the transition of adoptive parents. Can you tell us a little bit, just to get us started, of what that study consisted of? Obviously, we know it's longitudinal, but how many people did you have, and what were you looking for?
This study was actually a pretty good-sized study that we recruited folks from a large adoption agency in the United States. We ended up with about 130 adoptive parents. They filled out an online survey that consisted of several validated tools, including depressive screening tools. And then they also had the opportunity to complete open field comments about transitioning as new adopted families. Actually, because it was longitudinal, it was over time, we did our first data collection about a month prior to placement, as closely to that as could be estimated, and then about a month after placement, and then about 5 to 6 months post-placement as well. So three time points. And so the article, I actually sent Dawn two articles. The first is more quantitative or number crunching, and the second had to do with how we analyze those open field comments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just out of curiosity, do you have plans to continue the longitudinal, to interview the families again, or is the study over with?
It's pretty much over with. And I think that what we would like to do next, when you do research, you can kind of do descriptive research, which is this what this is, and then you want to ultimately get into interventions. So that's what we would like to do next, is we've been thinking about various, maybe some technology that might be helpful, some applications that adoptive families might be able to use that would help during the transition process, maybe exercises that they would become more aware of things, if you will.
Oh, fascinating. Okay, well, in the future, when you go further than that, we'll talk again. All right,
okay.
Let's jump in now to talk about transitioning home as a newly adopted family. So what are some of the expected emotions that new adoptive families should anticipate? And this these would be people who are pre-adoption on the verge, or those who have just gotten home. What are some of those expected emotions that most families feel?
Sure. I think, you know, again, going back to our open field comments that we looked at, you go kind of from uncertainty during the process. It can really create some anxiety for folks. You know, you can get so involved in the work of the process and checking off the next steps that you can lose sight of really that the child is going to be placed with you, that you're going to expand your family with this process. And so I think the transition is marked by this shift from uncertainty to homecoming and the honeymoon period of having the child home and achieving a life goal that has been, you know, set for a very long time for many of us. I'm an adoptive mother. And then finally that settling in, if you will, some new normal creations by families that maybe it is a new normal that was expected. Sometimes it's not a new normal that was expected, but it's this settling in, if you will, for all of the members of the family.
Yeah, and that movement from uncertainty into the high, and sometimes some people feel cheated because they don't have that honeymoon period or even the high.
Mm-hmm.
So what are some of the stresses that newly adopted families, how does it differ from a family, the stresses of a newly adopted family that might differ from a family that has given birth? Because honestly, some of the stresses are the same. If you adopt a baby, there's a lack of sleep, or even if you adopt a child, often there is a lack of sleep. There
sure.
is a change to your routine, sometimes a change in your role within the family. So, I mean, some of those are universal to parenting. So how does it differ to be an adoptive family versus a family that has given birth?
I think there's several ways that they differ. I think in terms of infancy, there's always unknowns. There's always things that an infant can display, that medical complications, et cetera. But I think that they are, in fact, a little bit more prevalent for adoptive families. We have an opioid crisis in the United States right now, so neonatal abstinence syndrome might be affecting their infant, or they may not have known of substance use issues with birth parents. There's always that uncertainty that the birth parent might change their mind about relinquishing, and you might have a failed adoption. So that is kind of a unique factor to adoptive families. The other is, as the adoption community is really in support of the continuum of open adoption, whatever that looks like for those families, there is that adjustment to a role taken on by those birth parents, varying levels of involvement that I think is, again, uniquely characteristic of an adoptive family. As the child who is adopted, if you're looking at a child that is older that is adopted, it's not so much about the age of the child, but in my opinion, in fact, what the child may have experienced prior to coming home to the family. And again, you're looking at a system in the foster care system, which we are seeing a spike in foster care placements. There is some speculation it could be due to substance use issues, but you don't know exactly what the child may have experienced. And so trauma then becomes really important for adoptive families to understand in terms of being a trauma-informed parent.
Yeah, and I'm glad you raised openness in adoption. The vast majority of adoptions, with the exception of international adoptions, have some degree of openness, even with foster care. It may not be with the birth parents, but with the birth siblings or birth extended family. And I think that oftentimes people, we truly work to help people not do this, but people haven't really thought through what openness truly is going to mean. Oftentimes they jump on it immediately because they're told that that's the only way they're going to find a placement. So they haven't done much thought about how to adjust. And I think a lot of times for many parents, there are insecurities that creep in. Right at the very beginning, and that's a feeling of, is this my child or is it her child? I think that can complicate, and it's often unanticipated. It can complicate. Did you see that in your study?
We didn't investigate open adoption per se. However, in earlier work that I conducted, it was in-depth interviews. We call it a grounded theory approach to the data analysis. I did interview several adoptive parents who had elected to have an open adoption or had negotiated that with their agency and the birth parents. And it was exactly as you described. There was this feeling of illegitimacy. Is this really my child? In some cases, too, unfortunately, the birth parent may be going through quite a grief process, making sense of the relinquishment, making sense of their choice themselves, going through some significant distress. And so I think it's really critical that all parties get support, including the birth parents, and that they have some either professional or trusted individual so that they can go through that grieving process and allow the adoptive parent to have a feeling of credibility, of I hate to use the word ownership because it's probably not the best word to use, but feeling of parentage, I guess I would say, child.
Even if it's a shared parentage, because, of course, our children do have other parents. But, yes, there is you not wanting to feel as if you're the babysitter, and I think that takes some people by. They report, when am I going to stop feeling like the babysitter? When am I going to feel like a mom?
And you want them to honor the agreement that they've entered into. You want them to be truthful and have that fidelity to that that contract, if you will, that they've made, or those promises that they've made to the birth parents. And so I think for everybody's sake, if they can feel secure and feel like a parent or co-parent or whatever the relationship they've negotiated and honor that agreement, I think that's really, really important.
Yeah, I do too. And I honestly, we also hear from parents who have been surprised that they're grieving for the birth parents.
Very much so.
Yeah, and that not they did not anticipate that, but they know that their child's birth parents are in pain, and it dampens their joy in a way because they know that their joy came at the expense of somebody else's pain.
Exactly, and so I think that guilt and, you know, the adoption triad, if you will, or triangle, however you want to refer to it, of the birth parents, the adoptive parents, and the child, I think of those three parties, we've often just kind of by default seen the adoptive parents as the winners and the whole dynamic of it. And so I think you're absolutely right. I think there is this feeling of I took something away, something so precious from other human beings. What right do I have? And I think that feeds into several expectations they have for themselves as parents, some of which can be unrealistic, and I would hypothesize, and my studies support this, that they can contribute to depressive symptoms post-placement.
Do you mean the expectation that because I have been chosen to parent this child and somebody is suffering in order for me to do this, I have to be a perfect parent. I have to be a better than average. I've got to be stellar.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's a pedestal that we all fall off of pretty quickly. And I think
crash off of might be the better way to say it, but yes.
And I think, you know, it's exactly as you described, those expectations. And those expectations, that dimension of themselves as parents is unique in terms of I've looked at expectations surrounding the child, of family and friends, and expectations of society. And the one that really, in my research, if you will, sticks out as an anomaly or something that is really different post-placement are those expectations of themselves as parents, which tend not to change too much. In other words, they aren't met. They are still very highly hypercritical, and I think it has to do with the fact that they know there are birth parents out there that they have been gifted this child, or this child's been relinquished to their care. And I think that charge, that responsibility, translates into those expectations and can translate into some struggles.
Well, and some people view the home study as like a, you know, the good housekeeping seal of approval, the adoption agency.
So.
And so I've got to, you know, somebody has said, I am going to be a good parent, and now I'm in the middle of the night, I don't even like this child. I am, you know, all I want to do is sleep. You know, I am sick to death of not getting out of the house. You know, I haven't shaved my legs and, you know, in weeks and weeks and weeks. And, you know, so things like that. And then you feel guilty for thinking these things.
Sure.
Somebody said you were going to be a good parent. Somebody chose you to be a good parent.
Right.
How does some of the transition differ depending on the age of the child? We've what are some of the unique transition struggles with adopting an infant versus unique struggles adopting a child past infancy, whether it's through foster care or international?
And you know, I thought of that question a lot, and I think that it really comes down to the child. I mean, if there's one characteristic in common with adoption, it's heterogeneous. I mean, it's so markedly different, and it can vary between the age of the child. It can vary between the path, if it's international, domestic, through the foster system or private adoption. So there's just this wide range. So I would say that the transition differs based, again, on those experiences of the child prior to placement. It also is a factor of development. So, you know, what is the developmental status of the child? I think it's incredibly important for the adoptive family to recognize that there might be for older children some testing, again, born from trauma, some trust issues, or there could be undisclosed, again, special needs, which could be emotional, cognitive, developmental. So I think it really depends on the factors that contributed to the relinquishment at times, I think it depends, again, on those expectations of the child that the family has.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have conspicuous families in the United States. I'm a adoptive mother in a conspicuous family, and I know firsthand how our family and friends and society received us. So I think preparing for those types of factors is really important in transitioning. We might be colorblind, but unfortunately some people in society are not.
Mm-hmm. In general, our society is not. So mm-hmm. being colorblind is not a is not a good way for parents to approach and being shocked. And we see that as well, speaking specifically of transracial adoption.
Mm-hmm.
It is still true with less so with international, I think, but certainly with domestic infant
mm-hmm.
and some foster care, that parents are not being well prepared for parenting a child of a different race. And that
mm-hmm.
can be a rude adjustment. And we will often have people coming to finding us, and we have a large online support group, and they will find that support group, which, by the way, is a Facebook closed group, Creating a Family. You can find it there. And they will find us because they're offended by somebody commenting on their child's race or
mm-hmm.
the discrepancy
mm-hmm.
and just not having thought, just not having been prepared for becoming
mm-hmm.
a conspicuous family and feeling
mm-hmm.
uncomfortable with the attention.
Well, that was kind of the impetus for my writing my most recent book. I had taken my daughter, who we received from India, and I remember taking her to so many healthcare providers and being looked at as not even a member of her environment. It was very off-putting, and I thought, well, what's going on here? This just isn't good for her care. I felt excluded.
Mm-hmm.
I felt my input was not valid in many respects, and so it really gave me, you know, in adoption, we've often seen the primary discipline of profession is social worker. Those are the folks that, as you've mentioned, do the home study. They're often adoption staff members, and they are the ones that do a lot in terms of legal and social work in regards to adoption. But there's also, we know from research and from data the government collects, that adoptive families do enter into the healthcare system more frequently than non-adoptive families. They do, in fact, seek counseling more often than non-adoptive families. And I thought it was really, really important to give context and information to healthcare providers. These are for advanced practice nurses, so your nurse practitioner you see in primary care, to have them understand not only the adoption community, but also the burgeoning and exploding demographic we have of kinship parents, grandparents raising
yeah.
grandchildren, some of
yep.
whom decide to adopt and create permanency for the child.
And even if they don't adopt, they're creating permanency through guardianship. And you're right,
mm-hmm.
Yes, and they have distinct needs.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask, you've talked about that there are so many different factors that influence how a family will transition from into as becoming a new adoptive family. Is one of those factors also whether or not they entered adoption through infertility, whether they had suffered for infertility? Have you seen any distinction? How does that play in, or does it?
Mm-hmm. So I think one of my early mentors, Barbara Ryla, who is in Texas, invited me to a post-adoption support group a long time ago, and I will be forever grateful for her doing this. And she said, you know, one fundamental question to ask is the couple's goal pregnancy or parenting? And I think it's a process. I think infertility and the rigors of treatments for infertility are very, very difficult emotionally and physically and financially. And from my own work, as well as what I've read of other folks' work and advice, is that really they need to go through that grief process if it is really important that they have a birth child prior to engaging in adoption, because they're really two distinct paths to parenting. And I think, you know, I think if they jump in prematurely into the adoption world prior to really closing that loop for themselves emotionally, it might be a little bit harder for them. It's not a second choice, if you will. It's another choice to adopt.
Yeah, we talk about it as I often think of infertility treatment as an escalator. And I say escalator versus stairs because it often feels when you are in treatment that the next thing is coming at you. And that all you have to do, it's, you know, we failed this cycle, okay, so we are going to do this. This is the next thing we're going to do. Then that doesn't work, we're going to do this. Then we're going to do this. Then we're going to do this. And I worry that oftentimes from an infertility professional standpoint that they view adoption as just the, well, if none of this works, the next step is that. But really, it's a different escalator because it also has its own process and it's also, you know, time-consuming or whatever. But and neither one is a better way to parent. And as with you, I am parenting both through birth and adoption. Neither one is better than the other, but they are different forms of parenting. And so I worry that as you point out, that people who have not really thought about all the various losses from infertility can get blindsided in this transition period.
And I think, too, there, you know, I interviewed one individual for my first book, and, you know, she said that she had seen, and she was struggling with infertility for a long time, and she had gone to all of the extended family events where they had, you know, gender reveals and birth cake and, you know, just these huge celebrations whenever a child was welcomed into the extended family through birth. And she had planned a celebration for her and her husband to announce their decision to adopt. And it was a much different reaction from folks. And it may have been very benign, just surprise, but it really had hurt her that they had seen it differently than a birth. And I think you still see that in society, that stigma surrounding adoption overall. I mean, the media is not particularly friendly to adoption. They sensationalize whenever there is maltreatment against a child in an adoptive context. Mm-hmm. So it's I think there's still that society stigma that may affect, too, some folks who struggled with infertility and decided to go to adoption. Their reactions from their extended family and friends may not be what they'd hoped for.
Yeah, I'm so glad you raised that because and oftentimes it is their extended family.
Mm-hmm.
Can be friends set as well, of course. But it's hard, and sometimes grandparents are not as embracive as they had hoped they would be. And sometimes the grandparents are going through their own set of grief of not having a biologically related grandchild or not being able to see, you know, their children, you know, or hints of their children and their grandchildren. And that can impact, may not impact how they help. Although I suppose it could, but it certainly impacts how you feel about their response, and that can be hard.
Right, and that can also spill over after placement, too, especially if the adoptive parent struggles at all. And I don't know how many folks have said they were told, well, isn't this what you wanted? If the individual sees that they're struggling, they are mystified that after having the child placed and welcomed into the family, that the adoptive parent would struggle. And so I think it even is like a double whammy there as far as this whole context of adoption into an extended and immediate family.
Yeah. Yeah, plenty of people. And even if they don't hear it, the fear that they are going to hear it if they do complain makes people hesitant to complain. And the honest truth is that every new parent, regardless of the age of the child and regardless of how the child came to your family, new parenting is hard, and every parent has the right to complain, you know, because it's hard. Yeah, I mean, you miss your old self. You miss time. Mm-hmm. You miss sleep. And all that is, and yet we revel in it when we are talking about a birth of a child. Child coming, because, you know, the first thing is, oh, are you getting any sleep, or, you know, how many hours, you know, so it's like it's a communal celebration of your pain, and yet, and adoptive parents don't often, may not get that, and it's particularly if they adopt a child past infancy, people don't even recognize that they're probably not getting sleep and not having time to shave their legs and things like that.
Right, Right, right. Or you have to, I think they feel this balance between they don't want to contribute to any more fear or stigma that they have maybe encountered prior to placement. They want to temper it with normalcy, or if they are encountering problems, that trust issue I think is a big factor.
A trust issue, what? Meaning trusting other people in order to, with
right.
your sharing your yeah.
Yeah, disclosure. Yeah. Trusted disclosures, yes.
Yeah, that I can complain and still be a
mm-hmm.
Still be appreciative of what I
mm-hmm.
have, but still acknowledge that it's hard, and that
mm-hmm.
There are times where I miss my old life, even though
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't trade it necessarily, or maybe I would.
Sure.
and so that brings me. I think before we continue, I would like to talk. We're talking about some of the negative emotions. But let's also talk about some of the other emotions that you've encountered with,
mm-hmm.
you know, the incredible happiness and joy, because that is also part of it most often.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about that.
Oh, absolutely. So, when we did this qualitative analysis of these open-ended responses, you know, they were very grateful for the children. They enjoy parenting. They found for many adoptive parents, regardless of path, I think that they have their own very deep spirituality. I think that they have
mm-hmm.
they have consciously made a decision to parent. This is something that they want to do in their lives. And I think that that spirituality is very much linked in many instances with resiliency and finding real joy in parenting through adoption, building their family through adoption. So I absolutely think that, and even if there are struggles, I think that the ability to reflect and look back at a story well told and a narrative that has a good outcome, being able to affect a child's life and be able to parent in a very positive way to an individual that may not have had the opportunities or the love, most importantly, through the adoptive family that they're providing is really something to celebrate, I think.
Oh, I totally agree. And even with domestic infant adoption, the final achievement of what, particularly if you have struggled with infertility, the
mm-hmm.
final achievement of a long-held goal
mm-hmm.
is just
mm-hmm.
joyous. It can be so so fulfilling, and you've wanted it for so long, and along with sometimes that adds some pressure. It also adds a great deal of contentment, or it can add a great deal of contentment. So I think that's an important point to mention as well.
That's true. I have one of I'm sorry for the static. I'm not sure if it's on my end. It probably is. But one of my really good friends, she used to actually babysit for my children. She became a counselor in the social foster care system, and as well as struggled with some infertility, and she and her husband ended up adopting domestically, privately, and, she posts her Facebook pictures of the infant pretty regularly, and it's just wonderful to see this little girl expanding their family, expanding their joy. It's just
mm-hmm.
very, very wonderful to see.
Yeah, exactly. You are listening to an interview for Creating a Family. Today we're talking about transitioning into adoptive parenthood, things you should consider. And we're talking with Dr. Karen Foley. She is the director of the PhD in nursing program at Purdue University School of Nursing. She is the author of Post-Adoption Blues, and she's the author of a new book on nursing care of adoption and kinship families. And let me remind everyone that this show is brought to you by the support of our partners. A few of our great partners include Vista Del Mar. They are a licensed nonprofit adoption agency with over 65 years of experience helping to create families. They offer home study only services as well as full service infant adoption, international, and foster to adopt programs. Also, Adoptions from the Heart. They have been helping to build families since actually 1985, over 6,000 families, and they do it through domestic infant adoption. I want to start talking now about something that we first heard about you from, and that is your book, Post-Adoption Blues. And you wrote it. Now, you were one of the first that started talking about post-adoption depression. And I am so appreciative of bringing that out of the shadows. Although it doesn't happen to everyone for sure, it is something that does happen, and we tend to think of postpartum depression, but not post-adoption depression. So first of all, what is post-adoption depression?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think it, you know, you have to ask yourself, what's postpartum depression? The Diagnostic and Statistical Manual 5, 5th edition, has actually expanded postpartum depression to a perinatal depression, which is quite interesting because based on our research, when we've looked at post-adoption depression, we do see evidence that there are some subgroups of adoptive parents who tend to be experience some depressive symptoms even prior to placement. So I guess to answer your question, post-adoption depression would meet the guidelines of depressive disorders. Symptoms can include everything from just a lack of pleasure in life, nothing to look forward to. They maybe have more agitation or more fatigue and lethargy. They might have changes in their appetite, but basically a lack of hopefulness, a blue mood, if you will. It pretty much characterizes those types of symptoms and the description of post-adoption depression.
You know, in postpartum, I think a lot of people assume that it is hormonal, you know, the dramatic shift mm-hmm. in hormones after the birth mm-hmm. of a child. And so people think, well, you know, you don't have a shift in hormones after the adoption of the child. So is there a hormonal connection with postpartum depression, or is it just the huge life change and adjustment to a huge life change that is more impacting and is more problematic for postpartum depression?
I'm not as familiar with the I think you can read both in terms of postpartum depression it being attributed to hormonal shifts. I know the postpartum blues is certainly connected to the mom's shifting hormones and can contribute to that six-week period of time after birth where the mom really experiences some feelings of down. But it usually is short-lived. Anything beyond about 6 weeks, then you kind of start to suspect that there is something more serious going on. In terms of post-adoption depression, I have talked to some adoptive moms who say, well, I kind of felt, you know, hormonally different after receiving a child. Mm-hmm. And we don't know for sure. We don't really know for sure. I think there are other things that, again, are somewhat unique to adoptive parenting that should be taken into account. Again, oftentimes we look at bonding. We are really concerned with the child bonding to the parent, when in fact there might be some difficulty for the parent bonding to the child. And I think that can happen in an adoptive situation and take a mother very unaware and a father too. It's mm-hmm. interesting also as we compare postpartum depression and post-adoption depression for fathers that we know the highest risk factor for a birth father experiencing depressive symptoms after the birth of their son or daughter is whether the mom is struggling with postpartum depression. We don't know that for sure because there's been so little research done with adoptive fathers, but it would be very interesting to look at that. The scant research that I have done with dads shows that there's a little bit of a different profile for dads than moms, but I think we really need to have a larger sample and look at that more closely.
Yeah, that's interesting, and I did want to, I'm going to, in just a minute, explore post-adoption depression in fathers, because I think that is something we so seldom talk about. Before I do that, I did want to, there's been some research that I thought was interesting talking about, that research found that there were really similar levels of anxiety or depressive symptoms, whether a mom had given birth or had adopted. Something about like 7.5% of mothers who had given birth compared to 8.8% mm-hmm. of adoptive moms mm-hmm. showed symptoms of and would have been qualified as depressed. And so just to kind of give people a feel for how not common, but the important thing is it's about as common as a postpartum depression. So that's and we give a lot of attention to that, so I'm glad that we're now addressing it. Now, let's do talk about dads, because we so seldom talk about dads. Can fathers have post-adoption depression?
I think so. I think so. And again, it might be because they've waited to, obviously, to start their family, you know, have a child home, and they might be the ones that are working and not having as much time with the child. They can certainly have synergy with their significant other in terms of if they're struggling or not. They might have financial concerns, especially if there are needs that the child has exhibited that they may not have anticipated or expected or prepared for. It could be just a myriad of things, but I do believe that just in the same way we have paternal postpartum depression, that adoptive dads can struggle as well. Again, you know, probably I would guess at about the same rates. The study that I had referenced before, we found about in general about between a 9 and a 10% rate of positive screens for depression for both mom and dads.
Okay. So it's depression can be an equal opportunity disease. Mm-hmm.
But they might exhibit the symptoms a little bit differently. So, I'm sorry to interrupt. But
please.
So the dad might be more women, and I don't mean to stereotype, but they might tend to internalize their feelings a little bit more, whereas men might become more angry and irritable, and they might tend to self-medicate maybe with alcohol or other things to try and mask the symptoms a little bit. So there might be those types of different symptoms exhibited based on the roles in the family.
Okay, so who is at risk for post-adoption depression? Or I guess what I'm really asking, are there ways to predict which people are going to be more prone to having depression after they adopt?
I believe that one of the big risk factors is a history of depression. We know that in the general population as well. We know that if you have an episode of depression, you might have another episode, so it's a risk factor. So I would say that those folks who have struggled in the past, we know that also anxiety and depression are often very much hand in hand. So those individuals who really have a very stressful path of adoption, maybe they've had a failed adoption, or maybe that they have just found the process to be extraordinarily stressful. If there's something upon placement that is unexpected with the child, maybe the needs, or if there's bonding difficulties, would also, I think, set up someone for maybe some struggles. We see different patterns in the different groups that we analyzed in the study that I mentioned earlier. Some at placement, their depressive symptoms decrease because there's this, we've got our child. We can now go on and become this family. Whereas others, we see their symptoms increasing. So I think placement is a pivotal time for all families, obviously. But those who are vulnerable to depressive symptoms, I think it's particularly vulnerable for them.
At that period of the period of placement, the actual transition, the movement from hoping and wishing and anticipating to the actual reality of parenting.
Right.
Yeah. Does the fact that adoptive parents, well, let me back up. When a couple or a person gives birth, that birth may have been something that was long awaited and planned for, but it's also possible that birth had caught them unawares, and so they're adjusting to not only the life changes that a child and a baby brings, but they're also adjusting to the life changes that they hadn't anticipated, parenthood at this time or another child at this point in their life. But that's not the case with adoption. You know, you can't accidentally adopt. You have to act you can from a kinship. Let me back up and say really that's one of the things we see in kinship families is that they did not anticipate this, and so there is that. But assuming it's a non-kinship placement, you have to actively choose to parent. Does
right.
that in any way change? But yet the symptoms are, I mean, the percentages of people who struggle with depression or anxiety after adoption is about the same. So, I mean, and I'm not falling into that says, gosh, you wanted this so bad, so why are you struggling? I'm truly not
mm-hmm.
saying that. But how does that anticipation, does it cut both ways, that maybe you've wanted it and built it up and put it on a pedestal that it can't, motherhood or parenthood, that it can't possibly meet? So help me out here.
Okay, I think there's a couple of dynamics that might be going on. The first is the adoption process takes on a life of its own.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a very easy trap to fall into in terms of seeing that process the end of that process as a goal, as the goal versus receiving the child. And I think that it's just takes on a life of its own, if you will. And so I think for some families, that process can be all-consuming so that they lose sight of the fact that, hey, yeah, I'm really going to have a child. We're really going to enter into a new period of our family, of our lives, with a new child in the home. So I think that preparation might be kind of dampened by the process itself. I
mm-hmm.
also think, too, that there is you know, the more you prepare, the more you educate yourself, and we have come a long way in the adoption community as far as requiring training and education for adoptive parents. But I think preparation has a lot to do with it. I've talked to lots and lots of particularly adoptive mothers who have said, you know, if somebody had just told me to be on the lookout for this post-adoption depression, if somebody had told me that it'd be normal to struggle for a few weeks, if somebody had told me that it's okay to not be perfect, that would have made a world of difference. So I think it goes back somewhat to those expectations too. So I think one way to maybe mitigate or prepare would be to look at those expectations in those dimensions that I had mentioned before. What do you expect of yourself as a parent? You're 45 years old. Are you going to have the energy of a 25-year-old? You've gone through a lot of pain and suffering, perhaps, in infertility treatments. Is that process over for you? Are you okay now to enter into a different decision in terms of family building? The expectations of the child, do you expect a child to look like you? Is this what you expect? Are you going to see behaviors that maybe you aren't ready for? How can you prepare for those behaviors? What's the developmental stage that this child is going to be? What can you expect of this child in terms of their brain development, if you will? What do you know about their history? How does that impact your expectations? And so on and so forth, extended family and friends, and then society, especially if there's a conspicuousness about your family. All of those ways, I think, to take that self-inventory and really talk yourself through it, talk to your significant other as far as what this means to you as this child comes to you.
You know, I am so glad that you talked about lowering expectations, because honestly, if we have heard one thing from all the experts we talk to about both transitioning as well as being satisfied through adoption, it is to have realistic expectations. And as you point out, mm-hmm. they're realistic expectations for yourself as a parent, as well as realistic expectations for your child, and how quickly your child will adjust, and or what your child will be like, and this goes regardless of the age of the child at adoption, is having
yes.
realistic expectations, and then also having realistic expectations of what it's like to be a new parent. If you're
mm-hmm.
oftentimes adoptive parents are a little out of step with their others of their age group. So they may not
yeah.
have
yeah.
people that they're actively seeing who are,
mm-hmm.
because they may be 10 years younger than them, and so they're not out and realizing
right.
that every
mm-hmm.
new parent gets absolutely nothing done, nothing, zero, zip, nothing. No matter what your expectations are, you are not going to get a darn thing done at the beginning. And that can be very hard for you. And if you don't see that your friends are going through it at the very same time, then you feel worse
yes.
about yourself. You think, golly, what's wrong with me?
I think that's
so
a really
so
good
glad.
Point, though, and that has to do with peer groups. And so
yeah.
who do you identify with? I mean, you have adoptive families are kind of this minority in society, and oftentimes we just accept it as part of our cultural practices, but it's really hard to find that, and I think that's why so many online support groups are so very helpful. The technology has really come forward to help families connect, share experiences along myriad dimensions, including age of parentage.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree with you more. So finding your new peer group of adoptive parents, but sometimes honestly, especially if you're adopting an infant, finding new parents of infants, so that in addition to your old friends, you're making friends who are going through the very same developmental
sure.
stages of parenting and children that you're going through. And there's a lot of ways of doing that. There are, of course, some of the Mommy and Me courses or Daddy and Me courses. There's things that the public library usually has that geared for the age of the child you have. Your local Y will sometimes have new programs for new parents. So there are a lot of ways. And even if you are older, you're going to find, most people find, that your age is going to become less of an issue because it's the shared experience that you're going through that matters more than the fact that you didn't come from the same generation. So,
Right. And there, I think there's some real, for a little bit older parents, I think that there can be a little bit more patience, a little bit more wisdom. I think there can be even a little bit more enjoyment because folks have waited so long to take this step in building a family. So I think there's some real positives as well. But you're right. I mean, I think that getting those groups, regardless of birth, adoptive parents, and seeing the development of the child through groups and peer groups is a wonderful thing.
So if you are suffering from post-adoption depression, what should you do? Is there help? Or do you just have to kind of gut through it and get better? And will you get better?
Well, I think for the child's sake. So I think that is something that we really need to emphasize very clearly. We know from research in both birth and adoptive families that if a parent is struggling with some depressive symptoms, the child will have negative effects as well. So, for example, they might have more depression themselves. They might have more anxiety. They might have more what we call externalizing behaviors and aggressive tendencies. So the child's going to pick up either through maybe less engagement from the parent or attunement. If they're not as readily available to the child, the child's going to experience those outcomes as well. And so it's really, really important that if a parent is struggling, it's very hard to admit that you're struggling. It's really important, if not for yourself, for the child's sake, to try and get some help. Now, that being said, one of the things that I would encourage folks to do is see if their adoption agency can help them connect with what we call an adoption-informed provider, somebody who understands the context of adoption, who will be able to provide insight within that context, so that there isn't any kind of a knee-jerk reaction to the family's permanency status through somebody who maybe doesn't understand adoption. I think that is really paramount for the individual. Some find relief in some help with medication, antidepressant medication, again, obviously under the supervision of a healthcare provider. But I certainly totally believe that there is effective treatment out there and that the parents should seek help sooner rather than later if they do believe that they are experiencing depression.
And I'm glad you talked about the impact on the child. A depressed parent is another form or can be another form of abandonment from a child because a depressed person is not able to attune usually and tune into their child. And that is harmful for children, and especially children who have your child if coming through an abandonment situation. It's a,
right,
and
like
you said
right.
before, a double whammy type of situation when they're struggling even doubly. And there, if you cannot find an adoption competent therapist, and on our website, creatingafamily.org, we give you suggested ways under our adoption resource guide of how to find such a therapist. But if you can't, don't let that keep you from going to any type of therapist to get yourself help, as well as talking with your medical provider as well about what can be done to make you feel better. One thing that I feel very passionate about is how couples transition into parenthood. And I wanted to talk some about how what we can to be prepared for and what we can do and anticipate for the changes that happen within, if you are partnered, if you do have a spouse, changes that can happen within that relationship and how that can harm or make the transition harder.
I think that actually adoptive parents fare a little bit better than birth parents in some respects, because it has been such a shared goal to create a family through, like you had mentioned before, it's a deliberate decision. It's a conscious choice. It's something that they do together. And an article by my very, very close colleague, Dr. Susan South, I don't know if it's been published or not, her actual area of expertise is on relationship satisfaction. And she found that actually adoptive parents who have struggled with infertility and proceed with adoption actually have more resiliency as a couple because I think of what they have been through, some of the hardship that they've endured. So I think that adoptive parents overall have some strengths that maybe are a little bit more in place than what you would find with some birth couples. Obviously, there are transitions that the couple go through. There is less couple times, but I think a conscious date night, not feeling guilty about having a babysitter for an adopted adopted child, knowing that that foundation for the family is going to be through that relationship and the strength of that relationship. I think it's okay to, articulate stress. One of the studies that my colleague did just on newly married couples, and it was not in the context of a family, but she did a measure of their relationship satisfaction, and it was pretty high because it was fairly soon after marriage. But what was interesting in the comments that we looked at as well was that they articulated stress and conflict and all of those things that go along with their relationship. That doesn't necessarily mean that the relationship isn't strong. In fact, I think a lot of people would argue that those types of things, depending on the resolution, can make relationships even stronger. I think it's really important, based on a child's needs, to be a unified front or have unified parentage of the child, especially sometimes if the child's a little bit older and comes to the family perhaps with some history of maltreatment or, as you said, abandonment issues, trust issues. It's really important for the couples to maintain open communication, to have the practice of how they discipline the child be consistent. Just consistency overall, I think, is really, really important in those situations.
I worry sometimes that with our focus and our discussion, both pre- and post-adoption, we talk a lot about attachment, and as well we should. But I worry sometimes that we've created an environment where couples feel like they can never be away from their child, that they have to be constantly, they cannot have a babysitter, can't even let a grandparent hold a child, much less watch a child for an evening when you get out to go to dinner or grab a movie or something along those lines. Do you see that? I really do worry, because I think that one of the things that's very helpful for a transition is to, and regardless, in my opinion, whether the child comes to you through birth or through adoption, is to proactively think of ways that you can support your relationship during throughout parenting, but in specifically during the transition period. Do you have thoughts on that?
Oh, absolutely. I think that we have two birth children and an adoptive child, and I think that for all of them, they have felt the most secure
knowing that my husband and I's relationship is sound. I think that provides them with a sense of security and a sense of trust in and of itself. So I think and allowing the child to be taken care of through quality daycare, through relatives that provide obviously nurturing, safe environments is really important. I think that the foundation is through that, if it's a dual parent household, it's through that quality of relationship that really can provide that strength overall in the family.
Mm-hmm. And since we're talking about transitions, and since many of the people listening to this will be pre-transition, or even if they're post-transition, it's not too late. One of the ways to cope with transition is to spend some time making certain, and it won't just happen. You have to plan it. You've got mm-hmm. to come up with times where you and your partner, again, if you have a partner, are able to be together and to remember why you married each other in the first place. And why did you decide to parent in the first place? You know, all those things. You've got to have time with each other.
Right.
So, yeah. So I think
it's amazing. I think it's amazing how children really are observant when we don't realize they're being observant and are taking in a family milieu when we're not even aware that they are. And maybe it's even through osmosis sometimes, but they are very attuned to the fact if there is a relationship satisfaction present or not. And we know that relationships need, as you said, deliberate attention and mm-hmm. deliberate time together. And I think especially for couples who have been perhaps not with children for a long time, that they pay very close attention to how the child has changed the dynamics for the better, and perhaps how they need to attend to themselves as a couple even more deliberately after a child is home. And as you said, it's not easy sometimes. The clock can be ticking, and you can realize that maybe you haven't had time alone together for a really long time. It's important, though. It's important for the whole family and the whole home environment.
Somebody told me before, it was probably before we had children, that the greatest gift you can give your child is a strong relationship with their other parent.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if you're wanting to know the single best thing you can do for your kid, well, that may be it. So spend some time, doing that. Well, this has been absolutely wonderful. I so appreciate Dr. Karen Foley, you're talking with us today about transitioning for adoptive parents and things that we need to be aware of as pre-adoptive parents and newly adoptive parents. Thank you so much for being here.
I appreciate it.
Let me pause for a moment and remind you that this show is brought to you through the support of our partners, and one of our wonderful partners is Hopscotch Adoptions. They are a Hague-accredited international adoption agency placing children from Armenia, Bulgaria, Croatia, Georgia, Ghana, Guyana, Morocco, Pakistan, Serbia, Ukraine, and they also do kinship adoptions. Let me remind you that this show is the opinions and expressed were the opinions of our guests and do not necessarily reflect the positions of Creating a Family or our partners or our underwriters. It's also meant as general advice. If you want to understand how it applies to your specific situation, you need to work with your adoption professional. Now, I know people are going to want to get, and you should want to get, Dr. Foley's books, especially the Post-Adoption Blues book. I think the other one may be more geared for nurses, but nonetheless, it would also be it'd be a gift you should give your doctor or your nurse. That would be a great one. Both of them get a little pointed, right? By the way, you need this. Her books can be bought on Amazon, but you can also ask your independent bookseller to order them, and they can do that. To get specific information about Dr. Karen Foley, you can go to the Purdue faculty website and type in her name. Thank you so much for being with us today, and I will see you next week.
Your hands were made for greatness. Mighty hands for painting. paneling, and clicking the submit order button on homedepot.com to get that duvet. And these Egyptian cotton towels delivered right to your door. Do more with decor at the Home Depot. Save up to 30% on select bedding and bath. Now at homedepot.com. More saving, more kinds of doing. Valid on select items online only. Free delivery on select items $45 or more. Enter promo code bedbath15 at purchase for an extra 15% off. Visit homedepot.com for more information. Your hands were made for greatness. Mighty hands for painting, paneling, and clicking the submit order button on homedepot.com to get that duvet. And these Egyptian cotton towels delivered right to your door. Do more with decor at the Home Depot. Save up to 30% on select bedding and bath. Now at homedepot.com. More saving, more kinds of doing. Valid on select items online only. Free delivery on select items $45 or more. Enter promo code bedbath15 at purchase for an extra 15% off. Visit homedepot.com for more information.